Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, May 7th, 2020. Energy. Commissioners pivot from pro-rationing to flaring, by Mella McEwen. Flaring made its way into the conversation surrounding whether or not the Railroad Commission should implement statewide oil production cuts or pro-rationing. Several speakers at the RRC's April 14th hearing on pro-rationing urged the commissioners to use cutbacks as a way to address the problem of flaring in the state. As the three commissioners headed toward a final decision on pro-rationing, Commission Chair Wayne Christian asked the Blue Ribbon Task Force for Oil Economic Recovery to study the ongoing problem of flaring. Flaring is an ongoing problem for the oil and gas industry. The problem of flaring and its perception has caused a lot of financial problems in the past, Christian said. The issue is not going to go away when the industry recovers unless we do something about it now. He said the commission has waited for industry feedback, but time is ticking and we want the agency to address the issue. I'm asking the task force to continue meeting and come back to our June 16th meeting with ideas on how the commission can better regulate flaring. Commissioner Christy Craddock told the Reporter-Telegram in a phone interview on Monday that flaring has been an important issue as the agency the last 8 months and the topic of a lot of conversations. As an agency, we have rules in place, she said. We've gotten input from industry about best practices. We've been adjusting our processes as well. We've limited more flaring than people realize. Commissioner Ryan Sidden, who supported pro-rationing, agreed flaring is a challenge, but he questioned why, if those who opposed pro-rationing rules said the commission couldn't consider economics but only physical waste, should the commission adopt a new stance on flaring that's not related to an emergency situation? Let's take the testimony on pro-rationing and apply it to flaring, he said. Economy. Groups sell T-shirts to help local restaurants, by J.C. Lewis. Visit Midland and the Shimmy Shack have teamed up to raise funds for restaurants in the Permian Basin. Restaurants are slowly reopening after being closed since March. Lindsay White, the marketing director from Visit Midland, said they have been working diligently to support tourism partners in Midland during the pandemic. One way they are doing that is with Hospitality Tees. All the proceeds of sales of the T-shirts are going to local restaurants that have been affected. We thought that it would be a great way to give back to our Midland tourism partners, she said. That's how the Hospitality Tees campaign came to life. She said Visit Midland has had the T-shirt designs in-house with the idea of selling them at the Information and Travel Center. The money will be given to the Permian Basin Restaurant Association, which is creating an application process for the funds to be distributed. Travel and tourism in Midland is the number two economic driver behind oil and gas in 2018. This is the most recent travel stats that we've got, she said. $859 million was spent in Midland through travel and tourism, and 4,230 were supported because of travel and tourism. We really want to promote the local business at this point and how vital they are to our tourism community in Midland, White said. White said they have now added children's sizes to the campaign. In the middle of the campaign, we were getting requests for children's sizes, White said. I think that shows that people are taking well to the campaign and they want to show their support for the Tall City as well as the restaurants. The Shimmy Shack owner, Taylor Kabula, got involved when CRM analyst Amy Harrison asked her to partner with them to help with selling the shirts. They were just looking for someone to partner and have the means to ship, Kabula said. I would say like 80% of the orders are local pickups, but there's a good amount that's still being shipped out. Kabula started the Shimmy Shack about a year ago. She recently finished remodeling an Airstream to house the boutique. I wanted a way that I could help out, she said. This was a way I could help out bigger than just my business. She said they have sold about 300 hospitality tees so far. Visit Midland has designed other t-shirts that will be sold at the visitor center when it reopens. White said they chose the Tall City design to remind Midlanders to stand tall. We chose the Tall City design of the shirts that we had because we feel like Midlanders need to stand tall during everything that the city is facing during this time, she said. We felt that this particular design was the best fit for the campaign to instill positivity and community pride. Where to buy hospitality tees? ShopTheShimmyShack.com. Adults' shirts are $30. Kids' shirts are $20. Sea Breezes Building. Caption: Work continues Wednesday for Walk-On's Bistro and Bar at the northwest corner of the Loop 250 Frontage Road and Whitman Drive. New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees is co-owner of the sports-themed restaurant and was in attendance a year ago when it was announced Midland would be getting a Walk-On's. The menu includes traditional Cajun cuisine, seafood, soups, salads, sandwiches, and burgers. Beef shortage impacts Midland's Wendy's hamburgers, by Christopher Hattern. A Wendy's Hamburgers location in Midland is not offering two menu items because of the beef shortages caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. A manager from Wendy's Hamburgers, located on 902 Andrews Highway, said her location is not serving Dave's Triple and the Double Stack during this time, being because of the meat shortage. Lakeisha Price said her location received only 7 cases of beef out of 20 requested during its most recent order. We got an email Wednesday morning that said they are slowly working with the suppliers to try to get the demand up for our ground beef, Price said. We don't know how long it will last. Our food supplier, we have to send them how much meat we have every morning because they decide on how much meat they are going to send. Price said her restaurant has been impacted by the beef shortage since last week. She said Wendy's is impacted more than other restaurants because it serves only fresh beef to customers. Price said, on the bright side, her location shares beef with two Wendy's locations in Odessa, one in Big Spring, and the other Midland location, so that's helping all the Permian Basin restaurants spread around the supplies. Right now, there's no strain as long as we are sharing the meat between all of our home market, which includes Odessa, Midland, and Big Spring, Price said. We haven't been running out that way because we all get trucks on different days, so we kind of share and move meat around. The Associated Press reported that just over 1,000 Wendy's restaurants, nearly 20%, had no beef items for sale on their online menus Monday night, citing an analysis done by Stevens Incorporated. The AP reported that beef supplies have been momentarily impacted by the shutdown of several meat processing plants after workers have fallen ill with COVID-19. A management official with Five Guys, located at 2816 West East Loop 250, said Wednesday that his hamburger chain restaurant, which also uses fresh beef, has not been affected by the beef shortage. UTPB, School Will Be Different in the Fall, by Stuart Doran. The University of Texas Permian Basin officials said Wednesday they are optimistic that they will be able to welcome students back to campus in August, even though it likely will be different than last fall. Our plans will be guided by medical and public health experts and in accordance with federal, state, and local directives, Sandra Woolley, UTPB's president, stated in a press release. We are committed to finding the right balance between our two most important objectives. Number one, the well-being of the Falcon family and our community. And number two, fulfilling our core mission by educating the next generation of leaders and inspiring creativity and learning. The university admittedly does not yet have all the answers in place because uncertainty continues to persist and will do so for the near future. However, we are confident we will find a way forward. A task force made up of representatives from each area of the campus have been working to come up with a flexible plan, according to the university. The plan will use blended options that include campus-based experiences as well as high-quality online and hybrid learning. Here are some preliminary considerations according to the school in its release. Staggering class times and locations to promote social distancing. Staggering work schedules for staff combined with some additional remote working hours. Blended instructional models. Hybrid, online, and campus-based instruction. Protective equipment and cleaning, sanitizing strategies. Protective measures and accommodations for those who are at greater risk. Robust testing protocols for students, faculty, and staff, quarantines as needed. Contact tracing, test isolation when appropriate. Prohibiting large gatherings. Providing face covering protective barriers for transactional contact. Ensuing frequent deep cleaning of facilities, including classrooms, labs, and common space. And finally, new rules for housing and dining halls, athletics, and campus events. No first day of the fall semester was listed in the press release or on the school's calendar online. UTPB went to online instruction following its spring break in March. I am so proud of the students, faculty, and staff who have responded to this challenge. Our university did not miss a beat this spring, Woodley stated in the release. There has been no disruptions to the high-quality academic services we offer at UT Permian Basin. Our summer classes will remain online with the same inspired teaching and learning. MMH staff sew 10,000 masks for colleagues and patients, by Caitlin Randall. The Midland Memorial Hospital employees who found themselves without work after elective surgeries were canceled began sewing masks to address a shortage of personal protective equipment. During the 5 weeks their departments were shut down, they sewed more than 10,000 masks for their colleagues and patients in the hospital. Chris Beagill, Director of Perioperative Services, said he pitched the idea for displaced employees sewing masks after being inspired by the efforts of his wife, Cassie, who was making masks for staff and others in the community who needed them. When the opportunity came up, I asked our leadership, why can't we do some of this work here? Why can't we help the community the way that she is? He said. They started with 3 sewing machines in the surgical waiting room, then with the help of donations, expanded the operation to 16 machines until they had a full-fledged factory, Jill said. On their busiest day, there were about 30 employees cutting fabric and sewing masks and made 150 to 200 an hour. Bajil said the endeavor addressed 2 problems at once. Employees with no work who weren't needed elsewhere in the hospital and a shortage of protective gear. The cloth masks are worn by staff who aren't in direct contact with COVID-19 patients to preserve N95 respirators and isolation masks, he said. They're also being used on patients in the emergency room to lower the risk of exposure for employees. It's not a secret to anybody that there was a shortage nationally, he said. So, as we were encountered with this problem where we're shutting down the operating room, just in the perioperative services, we probably have 150 people that were going to be struggling to find work if we didn't do something. And we kind of put the two together. How we can help our PPE problem and how we can help people stay motivated and engaged and employed. Christian Nall said it was scary watching employees who work in elective procedures be furloughed nationwide, and in Odessa, where nearly 100 employees were furloughed at Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center. I looked at all this happening with COVID and the possibility of not having a job because our department was being shut down, she said. And so, for me, administration and management seeing an opportunity to employ us, to keep us working, it's huge. I know all of us are grateful to have that. The sewing group also provided a way for staff who mostly work alone to form friendships with their colleagues, said Jordan Napoli. Being in endoscopy and the operating room, we both are very secluded units, she said. We usually just interact within ourselves, so getting to work as a team with everyone else was awesome. Bijil joked that now staff who meet through the project can recognize the people they've passed in the hallway for years. It's strange because this group of people is one of the most isolated groups in the hospital, he said. We stand behind big red doors that say, no, you can't come in. So to interact with so many different people on so many different levels, it was really good for all of us, I think.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, May 7th. Ector County reports 5 new coronavirus cases by J.C. Lewis. The Ector County Health Department website reported 5 new positive cases Wednesday, making the total 90. There are 3 probable cases at this time. ECHD reported that 60 people have recovered. There have been 1,405 tests taken with 1,245 negative results and 70 pending results. ECHD has contacted 1,109 people during contact tracing. The drive-thru at the Ector County Coliseum received 3 positive cases. Of the 52 tests done, 36 are negative and 13 are pending. 192 people have called the triage center for testing. Medical Center Health System President and CEO Russell Tippin said MCH has tested 785 with 55 positive cases, which is one more positive case than on Tuesday. MCH is treating 3 patients at the hospital, but none of them are on a ventilator at this time. They have received 712 negative tests and 18 tests are pending. MCH has no persons under investigation at the hospital during this time. Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmon said that 2 nurses are still at home quarantining. Another housekeeper is quarantining at home during this time because she carpooled with the housekeeper who tested positive. Odessa Regional Medical Center President and CEO Stacy Brown said ORMC has tested 316 with 14 positives. Brown said they have received 298 negative tests with 4 pending tests. ORMC is not treating any coronavirus patients during this time. Ector County by the numbers. Confirmed cases 90. Day since first case was confirmed 40. By gender, male 35, female 55. Age group 0 to 19, 8, 20 to 29, 16, 30 to 39, 18, 40 to 49, 15, 50 to 59, 18, 60 to 69, 13, 70 to 79, 2. Source of exposure, travel related, 8, person to person, 65, community spread, 10, unknown, 7. Midland Medical Lodge, 5 residents test negative this time and are recovering. 3 more cases confirmed, bringing total to 94. Officials with the Midland Medical Lodge reported Wednesday that five of the residents who previously tested positive for coronavirus have tested negative. An administrator with the lodge stated in an email that all five tested negative for COVID-19 Wednesday morning. We will continue to monitor their recovery and all of our residents with the utmost care. The negative tests came one day after the 37th resident of the Midland Medical Lodge tested positive. All residents who are confirmed cases were moved to Midland Memorial Hospital earlier this week. Seven MML residents have died from the virus, according to information provided by the city. The number of total cases inside Midland County now stands at 94, after three more, including one lodge resident, were confirmed Wednesday afternoon. The City of Midland Health Department is currently conducting its investigation on these three new cases. The 92nd confirmed case is a male in his 70s who was tested by Midland Health. He is a resident of the Medical Lodge and is currently an inpatient at Midland Memorial Hospital. The source of exposure is contact to known case. The 93rd confirmed case is a male in his 40s who was tested by Midland Health. He is currently self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is contact to known case. The 94th confirmed case is a female adolescent, 10 to 19, who was tested by Midland Health. She is currently self-isolating at home. Opinion from the MRT for Thursday, May 7th. Opinion Extra by editor Stuart Doreen. Idea's takeover of Travis creates excitement about performance. Midlanders are embracing the opportunity for academic excellence. This seems to be the case, judging by a wait list of more than 300 for IDEA Public Schools' takeover of Travis Elementary. By now, Midlanders probably know of the efforts to bring IDEA Public Schools to Midland Philanthropy, and business led the effort with tens of millions of dollars invested to guarantee up to 10 schools in Midland and Odessa. The recruitment of IDEA Public Schools has became public-private when Midland ISD partnered with a charter company to take over Travis Elementary, the worst-performing school inside the Midland ISD system and one of the worst-performing campuses in the state of Texas. Seeing the reaction of people in Midland's southeast side and throughout the city, people want Travis to succeed and are optimistic the ultra-successful IDEA public school system will make that happen. IDEA announced this week that 80% of the teachers at IDEA Travis will be relocating to Midland for the 2020-21 school year. That's right, 80% relocation. They will be coming from Los Angeles, Hawaii, Tennessee, El Paso, San Antonio, and Oklahoma, according to an IDEA Public Schools release. While MISD has said there are issues in recruiting personnel, IDEA found a way. IDEA will be a benefit beyond its ability to achieve academic success at Travis. Midlanders should expect that MISD will replicate what they see from the charter school operator in its own practices. I believe that will take place, as Chief Transformation Officer Elise Kale said during a meeting about charter partnerships, that the district will be looking to learn from operators such as IDEA Public Schools and Young Women's Preparatory Network, the operator of the Young Women's Leadership Academy. If MISD doesn't learn from those successful organizations it has recruited to the city, it will be a missed opportunity. I am pleased MISD leaders have made choices to provide quality opportunities for its students, but at some point the district has to be responsible for bringing its own schools to satisfactory performance levels, not just handing campuses over to someone else. The community needs to see that MISD can bring about the type of transformation it has farmed out to third parties. If that doesn't take place, Midland ISD could end up in a tough position. Idea Public Schools, it appears, is here to stay, and people are responding. After the opening of Idea Travis, Idea will be opening at least 4 more campuses in Midland. Those will not be partnerships. Should population growth plateau, IDEA won't be here to take an overflow of students, but be in competition with MISD for students already here. As we have seen, people are excited about IDEA and what it can do. It would serve MISD well to be able to generate its own excitement around academic performance for all students. If the district doesn't show results, parents know there is someplace else for their children to go.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, May 7, 2020. PBAF receives $50,000 grant. Texas Mutual Insurance Company has awarded a $50,000 grant to Permian Basin Area Foundation for its coronavirus relief and recovery efforts. The donation is part of the company's larger $2 million commitment to nonprofits across the state, according to a press release from Texas Mutual. Because of COVID-19, many local businesses may be struggling and may not have the means to support their local nonprofits as usual. Texas Mutual is stepping in to bridge that gap by offering financial assistance to local organizations so they can continue providing crucial services, according to the release. SM Energy donates $15,000 to Centers. Centers on Monday received a $15,000 donation from SM Energy to help the nonprofit meet the mental health needs of the community during the coronavirus pandemic, according to a press release. "We are committed to helping people in need, especially during these trying times," said Executive Director Christy Edwards in a statement. "With community partners like SM Energy, we can continue our outreach and service to the people who need it most, and we are truly grateful." Centers is currently waiving an assessment fee for all new clients through the end of May and is offering 2 free sessions to all healthcare workers and first responders battling COVID-19 on the front line. Soup Kitchen resumes to-go meals. The Midland Soup Kitchen, 1401 Orchard Lane, will resume serving to-go meals beginning today. The nonprofit, operated by Jason and Nancy Ivy and their sons, Jay Anthony and Nathan, serves lunch starting at 11:30 a.m. MISD has teacher appreciation signs. As part of Teacher Appreciation Week, Midland ISD and the Education Foundation is giving away yard signs to members of the public to show support for teachers. The signs, which say, "We heart our MISD teachers," are available for contactless grab-and-go pickup at each campus near the flagpole. Each campus had about 45 signs available starting Wednesday. The district produced 2,000 yard signs for distribution. Also, MISD began its Campus Teacher of the Year social media campaign on Monday. Each day, 2 teachers will be recognized on the district's Facebook and Instagram pages. The Midland County Excellence in Education Awards is led by the nonprofit Educate Midland and supported by contributions from the Henry, Scarborough, and Abel Hanger Foundations, HEB, and XTO Energy. Announcements for the district's elementary and secondary teachers of the year will be made in the coming weeks. Parents can apply for pre-K online. Midland ISD is launching its new online pre-K application process at noon Friday. To apply for pre-K, parents may do so via Apply Midland, midlandisd.net/apply. In the past, families of pre-K applicants were required to apply in person. Now, parents can complete an online questionnaire and upload eligibility documents. The Office of Early Childhood Education will review applications and verify submitted documents and will then contact the family to confirm the child's eligibility for pre-K, according to a press release from the district. For more information or to request assistance, call 240-1530.
Amara Gelato opens at San Miguel Square by J.C. Lewis. Midland has officially reached 100 degrees weather, which means ice cream is in season. Amaro Gelato opened April 24th in San Miguel Square, 3303 Midkiff Road, Suite 183. The gelato shop also serves fresh sorbet, crepes, and coffee. Owners Eloise Cobos and Nabilt Alvarez said they sold out of flavors on the first day. The owners said they are currently offering pickup and curbside. I didn't want to do it online because we wanted an experience, Cobos said. You take a seat and enjoy it, but you can't do that right now. She said people are excited to come out and eat ice cream, so business has been going pretty well. Alvarez said that in this pandemic, their shop has been an escape for people. She said they love gelato, so they wanted people in Midland to have the chance to experience. She said the name Amara has double meaning. In Spanish, it means love, Alvarez said. In Italian, it means bitter, as in the flavor. The shop serves 16 flavors. Cobos said that their most popular is pistachio. They also serve Italian coffee. Alvarez spent a month at Carpigiani Gelato University in Italy about 3 years ago studying how to make gelato. Cobos and Alvarez moved to Midland to work as chemical engineers. Cobos worked with Alvarez's husband, and they found they had a mutual love for gelato. Other treats to cool off with. Marble Slab Creamery, 5115 West Wadley Avenue, has launched curbside pickup, carryout, and is available on Uber Eats. They are open 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Saturday and noon to 9 p.m. Sunday. Pop Bar, 200 Spring Park Drive, is offering delivery with 6 packs for $15 or 12 packs for $30. They are open Monday through Saturday from noon to 5 p.m. Fountainville, 1307 North Loop 250 West, near HEB, has been offering curbside pickup and delivery at fountainvilletex.com. The shop has created a new drink called Tiger King, which is watermelon and strawberry with a hint of coconut. They are open noon to 7 to 9 p.m. Saturday through Monday and 3 to 9 p.m. Tuesday through Friday. Southern Snow has been set up by Young Life at Wadley Avenue and A Street. A new flavor called Super Sour Spray is available. The Shaved Ice Trailer is open from 2 to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Cream Lab N7 Nitrogen Ice Cream, 3201 North Midland Drive, has opened the lobby for 25% capacity. They are also taking orders by phone at 695-6342 and online at creamlab7.com. Their curbside pickup is still available. Summer hours are 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 2 to 9 p.m. Sunday. Obituaries. Brenda Joyce Kendrick. Brenda Joyce Kendrick was born February 26, 1950, in Lawton, Oklahoma, to Rosellus Flowers Jr. and Rosemarie Jones. She attended William H. Taft High School and Northeastern State University of Oklahoma. Brenda started working for Southwestern Bell in Austin, Texas, and was then transferred to Midland, Texas. After retiring from Southwestern Bell, she began working in the radiology department at Midland Memorial Hospital, where she retired. On May 3, 2020, Brenda Joyce began her journey home. She was surrounded and supported by her loving family and friends during the last days of her life. She leaves to cherish her memories, her loving husband, John Kendrick Sr., of 39 years, sister Barbara Jones, brother David Jones, daughters Erica Wigner, Reggie, Courtney Flowers, and son Justin Avery, Rosellis Kendrick, stepdaughters Tiffany Kendrick Nichols, Eureka Keith, stepsons John Kendrick Jr., Craig Harold, and Jeffrey Kendrick, along with 20 grandchildren, 5 great-grandchildren, and best friends Cheryl Pickett and Viola Baylock. She was preceded in death by Rosellis Flowers Jr., father, Rose Marie Jones, mother, Berlin Beverly Eddins, sister, and Marcellus Flowers, brother. Family will have a private funeral service on Friday, May 8th at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. A graveside service will be held in Sand Springs, Oklahoma. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Elizabeth Piper Colquitt. Elizabeth Piper Colquitt, 97, died peacefully May 4, 2020 at Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, Texas, from complications resulting from surgery for a broken hip. She has now gone to be home with her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. A visitation will be held at the Alpine Memorial Funeral Home on Sol Ross Boulevard in Alpine, Texas, on Friday, May 8th, from 6:30 p.m. until 8 p.m. A graveside service will be held at the Marfa, Texas Cemetery on Saturday, May 9th, at 11 a.m. A reception will be held after the graveside service at the home of Hester Ann White, located at 713 North Plateau in Marfa. Service will be performed by Reverend Matt Miles, pastor of Fort Davis First Presbyterian Church. Miss Colquitt was born in Corsicana, Texas on April 6, 1923, to Leslie Derwent Piper and Lena Bell Ard Piper. On November 2, 1946, she married James Kellum, J.K., Colquitt in San Angelo, Texas. She was preceded in death by her parents and by her husband of 60 years. She is survived by 2 sons, Kellum and wife Emily of Dallas, Texas, Jay and wife Constance of Lake Buchanan, Texas. 3 grandsons, 2 granddaughters, and 5 grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, please make a memorial contribution to the Texas A&M Band in her honor. Jose R. Franco. Jose R. Franco was born in Marfa, Texas on August 27, 1942. He passed away peacefully in his home on May 4, 2020, after a long battle with aphasia. A small private family memorial will be held with immediate family, with a formal celebration of his life with his family and friends at a later date in Carlsbad, New Mexico. He is survived by his loving wife of 57 years, Amelia M. Franco, and five children, Ida Engelke, and husband Paul, Brenda Franco, Veronica Carrillo, and husband Gerald, Michael Franco, and wife Renee, Felipe Franco, and sister Amparo Lopez of Odessa, Texas. Jose was blessed with 13 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren who adored their popo. Jose was a great provider for his family and enjoyed working for El Paso Natural Gas in Jal, New Mexico, Midkiff, Texas, and Roswell, New Mexico, where he retired after 30 years. Jose made many friends along the way and was loved by all. Memorials and donations should be directed to Aphasia Center of West Texas, 5214 Thomason Drive, Midland, Texas, 79703. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Nelda Mae Saunders. Nelda Mae Saunders was born April 30, 1947, in Brownwood, Texas. Her family moved to Hayman, Texas, where she grew up, attended, and graduated for Forsand. She was a cashier at a 7-Eleven in Big Spring, where she met her husband, Kenneth. They were married October 4, 1971, and then moved to Midland in 1973, where she passed away surrounded by family and friends on May 3, 2020. She is preceded in death by her husband, Kenneth Dale Sanders, parents Johnny McDonald and Marjorie Henderson, and brother Mac Van Henderson. She is survived by two sisters, Juanita Stonerook of Oklahoma and Linda Henderson of Chicago, oldest daughter Toby Giles, husband Beau, and their kids Brett, Mackenzie, and Bryce, all of Mendel. Daughter, Lisa Tinley, and son-in-law, Nick. Five grandchildren, and many nieces and nephews. There will be a small memorial service Saturday, May 9, 2020, at 4 p.m. at the Cahoma Cemetery, and a family gathering following at 6801 East Midway Road in Cahoma. Arrangements are under the direction of Avalos, Sanchez, and Thomas Funeral Home. Tomina Ann Clark. Tomina Ann Clark, 76, an independently strong woman and proud mother and grandmother, passed away peacefully under the kind care of Sherman House Hospice of the Valley on April 16, 2020, in Scottsdale, Arizona. She was born in 1943 to Thomas Jacob and Catherine Lucille Reinhard at Harris Methodist Hospital in Fort Worth, Texas. graduated in 1961 from Paschal High School in Fort Worth. She married David W. Clark on December 22, 1961 in Dallas, Texas. The following year, they welcomed a son, David Jr. As time marched on and they drifted apart, the marriage ended in 1988. She is survived by her son David, daughter-in-law Stephanie, and two dearly loved grandsons, Spencer and Gannon. Also survived by her brother Tom, sister-in-law Bonnie, numerous nieces and nephews, and a host of cousins. Welcomed into heaven by parents Thomas J. and Lucille Reinard and stepfather Clyde Goodwin, paternal grandparents Robert and Grace Reinard, and maternal grandparents James Stroud and Susie Stroud. A private ceremony for immediate family will be held at a later date.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, May 7th, 2020. Front page. Threats follow protest arrests by Michael Merlo. M-M-E-R-L-O at OAOA.com. Edgar County's top lawman on Wednesday said his office received threatening messages and a voicemail that someone is going to come shoot up the town following a protest that ended in multiple arrests. After organizers were arrested Monday for having AR-15-type weapons on a reportedly premises where alcohol is sold, Edgar County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said that the sheriff's office noted a rise in threatening messages. Griffiths said that one of the threats was a voicemail left at the Edgar County Courthouse saying that they're going to come shoot up the town, he said. In August of last year, a gunman drove around Odessa randomly shooting and killing 7 people and wounding 25 others. Griffiths said a threatening message also was left at the commissioner's court office. There's rumors of people wanting to kill me, and none of this have been substantiated. I'm sure some of it is actual, he said, adding that on Tuesday a social media post released his home address and that of his ex-wife. Griffiths said that if ECSO can substantiate the threats, they will file charges. That's ridiculous, he said. Wednesday morning, Dallas area resident Philip Archibald, 29, one of the protesters who was not arrested Monday because he wasn't carrying a gun, said via Facebook Live he was hoping to hold a protest at Anytime Fitness in Odessa. The Ector County Sheriff's Office and at Griffith's residence for what he said would be a peaceful protest. He said although his group protests with weapons, they never intend to use the weapons. Griffiths said in a previous phone interview that all the weapons seized on Monday during the arrests were loaded. Griffiths said that if protesters have guns and are on the sidewalk, that's a public area and nothing can be done about it. If they come on private property, that's another story. They cannot take guns on the sheriff's office grounds. We have a secure jail facility there, and they're not going to take guns down there, he said. Griffiths said that he has received hate emails and all sorts of calls, and again, this has zero to do with the Second Amendment. It has to do with this group of individuals trying to intimidate law enforcement and keep them from enforcing the governor's order. That order forbids bars from opening in the wake of COVID-19. The Monday protest was at the West Odessa bar, Big Daddy Zane's. 8 people, including the bar owner, were arrested. The bar owner, Gabrielle Ellison, was charged with violating the executive order, and others were charged with carrying weapons on a property where alcohol is sold. Griffiths said that the incident Monday with armed organizers arrested could have gone very differently. He said that if she had opened without the group's tactics, then we'd probably have wrote her a ticket and went on. Griffiths said that he takes the threats very seriously, and if I am approached or whatever, I will take appropriate action, he said. Wednesday afternoon, Archibald and Ellison were among about 20 who showed up at the Edgar County Sheriff's Office protest. Some of those in attendance were men who were arrested on Monday. We're willing to stand up for the First Amendment, whether we're using the Second Amendment or not, he said during the unarmed protest. During the protest, members of the Edgar County Sheriff's Office stood on top of the building while media interviewed Archibald, an online fitness trainer, who said that he had attended Anytime Fitness in Odessa earlier, then the sheriff's office, and then to Big Daddy Zane's. After that, they protested outside the sheriff's house without weapons. Archibald said that he did not agree with any threats, but then said people were not going too far with the threats. I have no control over that. That's people being angry about what he did, and he deserves that. Archibald said that he started his own group after some of the admins of the Open Texas group didn't like the publicity they were getting in Ector County, and that he is working with other Second Amendment groups. He said the name of his group was called Freedom Initiative of Texas. He said that he had no idea where the group was going next, but that he might go to Shepherd, Texas, and help out a tattoo shop over there. Governor Abbott has not given the okay for tattoo shops or bars to reopen. Ellison, 47, said she never thought the situation was going to turn out the way that it did. I honestly thought that our sheriff was going to stand up and support us, she said. She said that David Ahmad, a gun rights activist and the vice president of Open Carry Texas, is coming down with a big old group, she said. Ellison read a message from him that said, the sheriff will respect our rights and they won't arrest us. She said she could not give out the date of when that would be, but that it would be peaceful. As far as talking with the sheriff, Griffiths, Ellison said that she hasn't had the opportunity to talk to him, but she would take it in a heartbeat. She said that she was against violence and also would not be attending Archibald's protest if they decided to go to the sheriff's home. Joshua Watt, 31, of Midland, and Jesse Simrad, 36, of Tyler, were both armed organizers who were arrested on Monday. They said that they weren't a part of Archibald's group and met them for the first time on Monday, but that they wanted to support a business owner who was struggling and wanted to help protect her right to open her business. It doesn't matter if you like guns or don't like guns, Watt said. You have rights that you do like, and all those rights need to be protected. Simrad and Watt said they would not attend other protests at the bar or at the sheriff's house. They said Archibald set up a GoFundMe for legal fees, and they wanted to make sure that those funds were going to the people who had to go to jail, and if it's not, then we'll start our own separately to make sure it is for that reason, Simrad said. As of Wednesday, the GoFundMe had raised $3,458 of the $100,000 goal.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.